become a patron of Entertainment Landfill. Go to patreon.com/landfill for details. Entertainment Landfill is made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Thank you. You're listening to Entertainment Landfill. Film, television, pop culture. It's where you find it. Everybody, welcome to ETL Daily, our new brand spanking new show, our daily buzz of ETL activity. What does that mean exactly? What is this all about? I don't know. It's a pilot episode, if you will. It's a show where we are going to talk about daily occurrings, like every day, like basically every day. I wake up about 5:50 and I shower and do all that stuff, get dressed, and then I feed the dog, and then I get my wife up, I get my daughter up, I make her their lunches for the day, and then I make sure that my daughter gets off to school. I take my daughter to school, and then I make sure my wife gets her coffee and she's off to work. And then what do? I sit down and I read the internet. And a lot of times I see stories that occur. I see little news bits that not only occur on one website, but as I go to the next, it follows me around all day. I keep seeing it. And I don't know if it's this, like Jason, find something else to do. Well, okay, I do. I'm talking about like 20 minutes while I'm eating my Pop-Tart, okay? That's what I'm saying. I'm skimming these different websites. And I see things like that Jared Leto... Or is it Jared Leto? I don't know. Some people say Leto, some people say Leto. But he's been cast as the Joker in a Suicide Squad movie. Okay. I've read that on several websites. There's nothing I can do about it. It'll follow me around all day. I'm like, yes, yes, I know. But then the worst part. This is the worst part. And you're going to say, if this is the worst part of your day, Jason, then, okay, shut up. I know that. I'm not saying it's really the bad and my life sucks or whatever. I'm just saying that this is how annoying it is. And that is that Entertainment Weekly tells me that Jared Leto is now playing the Joker. Okay. Then HitFix tells me that Jared Leto is now playing the Joker. And he's playing it in a Suicide Squad movie. And then Ain't It Cool News tells me, etc., etc., etc. And then IO9 tells me, and whatever. So, then what happens? I go onto Facebook for the day, and boom, there it is. Somebody in my timeline, hey, look, he's playing the Joker. Jared Leto. I don't care. I don't think it's good casting. He's too much of a pretty boy. Yes, Cliff Clavin is on my Facebook. So then I see that. And so eventually I'm just like, and what's worse about it is that I have no opinion when I read it. When I see that Jared Leto is playing the Joker in a Suicide Squad movie, do you know how much I care? I don't care at all. I don't care. Who cares? Who cares? So, this is Radio Dan drop there. So, guess what, guys? Jared Leto's playing the Joker, all right? So, this is when I read these articles. Also, you're like, Jason, why do you read these articles if they annoy you? I don't know! Just go along with me. They have to explain who other Jokers are in other movies. Okay, this is how this article starts, and automatically it's annoying me already. It's been 6.5 years since Heath Ledger was the Joker in The Dark Knight. Oh, really? Thank you! So informative! Oh, I get it. You're not really informing me. You're just reminding me. There hasn't been a supervillain half as good, not even close. You can stump for Loki in the Avengers or Thor, but as character, he's trapped in a mull of incoherent motivation. He hates Asgard. He loves his mom. He hates his brother. He's mad. He's mad, he tells you. Tom Hiddleston is the scenery chewer of the First Order, but the Marvel movies are made of green screen, and he's chewing on vapor. Okay, that's your opinion. But what other supervillains linger in the 6+ years of superhero cinema? Kevin Bacon playing an X-Men villain? Robert Redford in Captain America? Anne Hathaway had fun in The Dark Knight Rises, but is she a villain? I mean, come on! Don't even bring up shit from the Spider-Man movies. Like, we all know that Reese Ifans is a great actor, but do you remember any of the freaking Lizard or the dude from Chronicle and Spider-Man? No. Those guys are great actors, by the way, but they just didn't have shit. Ronan the Accuser or whatever. Yeah. So, Zod, General Zod in the new Superman, a lot of people hated Man of Steel. I liked it, but hey, dude, Michael Shannon, that dude is awesome. And he was great as General Zod. General Zod's a prick and he played it well. But, okay, now I'm like just interpreting what this article says because I'm not reading it anymore. Basically, they're saying that the Joker, man, that's quite a role, a meaty, good villain to do. I mean, think back Jack Nicholson. Think back when somebody like Cesar Romero or whatever. Those guys that had... You know, you could be crazy and goofy Joker, like, you know, you're Mark Hamill doing the voice. They always have fun. It's a fun role. So when you see the Joker, boom, Jared Leto, guys, boom, he's the Jared Leto. By the way, Magneto, he's a great villain. Ian McKellen, Gandalf. He's a great comic book villain. But anyway, stuff like that. So the David Ayer, the guy who did The Fury, which I haven't seen yet, the tank movie with Brad Pitt, he's directing a Suicide Squad movie. And you may say, hey, who is the Suicide Squad? I believe they're a team of guys. They're a team of assassins that do wet works. Like, they do secret covert ops to the highest bidder kind of thing. I don't know. So whatever, the Joker's in that. I don't think Joker's a member of the Suicide Squad, so he's going to be in it. So DC is trying to do what Marvel is doing, which everyone knows is come up with franchises that are successful and they can all cross over with each other and eventually do like a Justice League, which sounds great. Hey, I wish them the best of luck, and I hope they pull that off. But there's going to be a lot of this news coming up where, you know, the lady, Michelle McLaren, who did some of the best Breaking Bad episodes. She did some great Game of Thrones episodes. She's a director. She's female. She's doing the new Wonder Woman movie, which you're saying, which my first thought is like, oh, cool. You know, that's cool. I hope it turns out well. I hope it's cool and everything. But I don't have much thought on it other than that. Gal Gadot, who plays, who's going to play Wonder Woman in Batman v Superman. I don't know a lot about her. She's hot. She's very beautiful. She was in Fast and the Furious, the most recent one. She dies. Her character dies. So I guess she's not needed anymore. I thought it was a weird death in there. It was sad, I guess. I mean, she won't be in bikinis anymore in the movie. So that's kind of sad. But I won't even get into the old Paul Walker thing because I'm still bummed about that. And I don't even want to see the new movie, even though I guess it'll be a nice fitting send-off for him. I don't know if it will. I don't know even know why I'm saying that. It's just the kind of thing you do when you're doing a solo show and you just endlessly babble. So that's for you guys on ETL Daily here. So you may ask yourself, why, Jason, are you doing this show? I mean, why is this on my phone? Why am I listening to this? That's a question you have to ask yourself. But a lot of shit is going on. A lot of stuff is going on with Bill. I'm not saying a lot of things, he's very busy with stuff, and we haven't had time to do a show, and I'm dying to do a show. I want to get the shows out to you guys, especially our patrons, the people who support the show monetarily. That's a big deal. They're paying money for a product that they're not getting right now. The last show we did was, we did one show in November, and that makes me sick. It was November 18th. We put out Smarf, Entertainment Landfill episode 305. Before that, October 21st, we did a show, a lunchtime show, Steven and I, which was a lot of fun. And before that, we did another show in October, episode 304, Protocol 19. So whenever I feel compelled to, you know, a lot of times I'm sitting at home stewing, like, oh God, okay, I get it. Jared Leto's the new Joker. Instead of me talking to myself, how about I talk to you guys and bitch and complain about it, about Will Smith playing Deadshot. By the way, I'm not really excited about any of the DC movies. I don't really know how to react, except like, oh, cool. You know, when a trailer comes out, I'll watch it kind of thing. But, dude, I'm having so much fun watching The Flash on the CW. And I have to admit, you know, I record every episode of Arrow, but I'm so behind on it. And I always like the show, and I like the characters in there, especially the repartee between Oliver Queen and Felicity Smoke. They kind of have a will they or won't they kind of thing on the show, and that's fun. You know, some people hate that kind of thing. I don't mind it. You know, picture me, teenager, 13 years old, 14, horrible acne, reading comics, and I'm like, will they or won't they? No, but seriously, I love The Flash. I've always dug the comic book character, and the show is so much fun, and it's lighthearted, and they even play on that, how they did a crossover this week with Green Arrow and The Flash. And the Green Arrow goes to where the Flash lives, you know, his city, and he's like, wow, everything's much less dark here. You know, people have, all the villains have goofy nicknames and stuff like that. And they even have the Flash go on a mission with Green Arrow, and Green Arrow is interrogating a guy, and he shoots him with an arrow, and the guy's like, ah! And he goes, tell me what you know! And the Flash, he's like this young guy, he's like, dude, what the hell are you doing? You're torturing that guy! And he goes, that's how the Green Arrow gets answers! And he's like, whoa, I don't think I'm really into this, man. It was really cool. It reminded me of reading comics when I was a kid, when I would read The Brave and the Bold, where it would have Batman teaming up with Green Arrow, or The Flash and Green Arrow, or The Green Arrow and Green Lantern. It was always fun how it had the two characters, you know, they're getting along to solve a certain thing, but they both have their own way of operating. Like, Green Arrow's not going to stop being who he is just because he's there with the Flash. And the Flash is just kind of turned off by the whole violence thing where, you know, the Flash, he runs real fast and he punches guys and stuff. And his cool thing to do is to deliver them to the police handcuffed, you know, real fast. And no one knows where they came from. And but Arrow, he's like shooting dudes with arrows, you know, he's knocking them unconscious or he's breaking their arms to get them to talk. And the Flash is just kind of like freaked out about that. So it was a lot of fun seeing not only the Flash and Arrow interact, but also their sidekicks mingling together. It was a lot of fun. It made me really excited. It felt like a kid reading comics. And the Brave and the Bold, that was like one of my favorite kind of... I love those comics because this is what's funny about the Brave and the Bold and why it was one of my favorite comics is that I could buy like five of them or something for a quarter. usually in back issues. They, a lot of comic book shops, they have this pile or this section of just cheap dime comics that they're just trying to get rid of. They have a million back issues. They're not worth anything. They never will be. And I used to, I remember in California, I'd go with my friend Scotty, and I would load up on like old ass, you know, DC comics like that. Just, you know, Brave and the Bold or whatever. And I would bring them home. And sure, the stories were old, but they were self-contained. It didn't matter. You didn't have to worry about any continuity of what was going on at the time. It just, you know, would have two superheroes teaming up to fight one bad guy. And there was one, it was that I love, and it was Batman and Green Arrow against this magician. It was like a Houdini type magician who was stealing things from people. Like he would, oh, I remember what he would do. He was, he would hypnotize people. People would go to like this dinner theater thing and they would get, catch dinner, and then they would see the live magic show. What would end up happening is they would get hypnotized by this guy, and then they would end up, basically stealing jewelry for him. So as I'm sitting here talking about Jared Leto as the Joker, I then see that none other than Benedict Cumberbatch is now officially your Doctor Strange, which is cool. You know, I'm a Benedict Cumberbatch fan. I had no idea who he was until I saw Sherlock. Probably most people too. Kind of came out of nowhere to me. I don't know. I wasn't aware. And he's fantastic in this film called Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy with Gary Oldman. And if you see that, he's really good in that. So you can tell he's just a fantastic actor and he's going places. So, you know, he played the villain in Star Trek Into Darkness. And so he, you know, he's Smaug. The voice of Smaug, the dragon, Smaug, I mean, and he's everywhere. But that's not a bad thing because he's a great actor. If he was someone, say, like just a pretty face kind of guy, like who was the guy that was in everything? The star of Avatar. Say he's like a Sam Worthington who you keep seeing in movies, Clash of the Titans and that Ledge movie. And you're like, why does this guy keep getting work? He's just a face. He's not that great or anything. But actually, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, hey, great actor. Why would you mind him? Naturally, some people already had who they thought would be perfect for Doctor Strange. I myself, while I'm aware of Doctor Strange and I've read comics with Doctor Strange, I was never a huge Doctor Strange guy. The comics I own of Doctor Strange are because of the artist that drew them, a guy named Michael Golden. He was like an incredible artist, like my favorite comic book artist probably of all time. He did this actually as a portfolio of beautiful drawings of Doctor Strange. And he actually, it was Marvel sold it at one time. You can probably find it at eBay or something. But go ahead and Google, if you're interested in seeing some cool Doctor Strange art, Michael Golden, Doctor Strange art. And check it out. Just look in Google Images, and you will see that the dude is an incredible, you know, it's black and white. It's inks, you know, black and white ink. The use of ink, the way he inks, I mean, I don't even know what I'm talking about. I haven't appreciated comic book art in a long time, but I was a huge comic book art nerd. I mean, I love the comic book stories, but God, I was so into comic book art, and I would just stare at it all day. But his Michael Golden art was incredible, and so I would buy these back issues of there's Doctor Strange number 55. I remember it has this incredible cover, and the inside is just as gorgeous, and I loved his art so much. And that's what I knew of Doctor Strange from, like, that comic book. And the guy's a genius. It's almost like, you know, I remember me and my buddy Ray, we both wanted to be comic book artists. We would study Michael Golden's art, and the only conclusion we could come to is that he was an alien from another world because no human could draw this good. I know, it's pretty silly. So anyway, Benedict Cumberbatch is your new Doctor Strange. How do I feel about that? First of all, you're going to say, well, obviously Jason doesn't care because he hates that when anyone tells him Jared Leto or Leto, sorry, is playing the Joker. Actually, I'm going to contradict myself here because I am interested in this, and that's cool. And not only that, I read multiple articles with the same headline that Benedict Cumberbatch is perfect for Doctor Strange or whatever. So it's just like, wow, what a conundrum you are. Actually, I'm interested in one and I'm not in the other. That's just the way it goes. So Entertainment Weekly today, they have an article, 4 reasons why Benedict Cumberbatch is a perfect Doctor Strange. So I was reading over this, and Strange is kind of a jerk. The inciting incident for Doctor Strange's origin is one of arrogance. After a car accident leaves him unable to continue his work as a neurosurgeon, he delves into the world of magic and mysticism in search of a cure because he refuses to take a secondary role in medicine. Like Robert Downey Jr., Benedict Cumberbatch has to make an abrasive character likable, something he's done very well in Sherlock. Also, he can play a different kind of a jerk. That being said, Strange can't be another Tony Stark. Like Iron Man, there isn't a whole lot of general public knows about Stephen Strange. Even those familiar with comics can't easily sum up what he's about in a sentence. Lately, though, in Jonathan Hickman's New Avengers, he's been portrayed as a hero who will sacrifice everything to save the world, crossing lines no one would dare cross, including selling his soul. Whoa, crazy. Here's what I know about Doctor Strange. He is the Sorcerer Supreme. He has an assistant. Is his name Wong? Yeah, he has an assistant named Wong, who I think is... he's probably a badass too. You know, most comic book guys, their sidekicks are badasses also. Also, actually, that'll be cool, finding out who plays Wong later on. But also, he has the Eye of Agamotto, this kind of like thing, this amulet, and he has this cool cape. That's the thing that I'm interested about, is that if you're doing Doctor Strange as a movie, Doctor Strange wears a ridiculous looking cape. It looks cool in the comic books, and it looks cool the way artists draw it, but it's got this big pointy collar. Wow. They're going to have to, I'm curious to what they do with that. I know that, you know, one thing in this day and age of comic books and, comic books to film, they're never really literal in the translation. If you look at the way Captain America looks and the way he looks in comics, they did a good job of, you know, although, you know, I thought that his outfit looked much better in The Winter Soldier than it did in Avengers. You know, they're tweaking it with each movie. But it could look ridiculous if not done right. And I think they're getting it right, where when I watch it, I'm not like, this is ridiculous. That's one thing I like about The Flash on television, is that his outfit in the comics translated to TV perfectly. I mean, and I'm going to say perfectly, visually, you know, basically superheroes wear skin tight outfits in comics. That's the way they draw them. That wouldn't work on TV. It'd be ridiculous seeing this guy in this body suit that, perfectly shows his entire body. It'd be very strange. And, but they make it kind of more of like a red leather outfit, you know, kind of like, it works in the TV show. That's one thing that a lot of people think of Ben Affleck's Daredevil. Did they get the outfit right in that movie? I'm going to say close. I mean, it's kind of like a motorcycle jacket kind of thing where I guess you get used to it. Maybe it's not perfectly right. But I think the thing that hurts that film is actually the CGI more than anything, more than just him standing there in the outfit. I think it could work. And in that film, did it work? I'm going to, just by memory, say, yes, it was passable. Could it have been better? Yes. Will Netflix do a better job with the Daredevil outfit? Will they make it all black or whatever? Like, I've seen some pictures. I honestly think that'll be his early outfit. You know, they'll have Daredevil going out and testing the waters like Batman Year One. It'll be Daredevil Year One. His first outfit, you know, like Spider-Man, he had a trainee outfit before he went full Spider-Man. It'll be something like that. So that's probably what that screenshot is. But anyway, I'm all over the place. But Benedict Cumberbatch, gravitas. Cumberbatch is very good at simmering intensity. It's why he's the voice of Smaug. And the sort of thing that went to waste when he played Khan. Doctor Strange is a very different sort of Marvel hero. He's not funny, he's not young, and he deals with threats that can't be dealt with by punching. He's a guy who devotes his life studying nightmares so the rest of the world won't even have them. Yeah, that's a mouthful of a sentence. So anyway, articles like this are stupid. So, anyway... So we know Jared Leto's playing the Joker. We know Benedict Cumberbatch is Doctor Strange. But also, we know that Kristen Ritter is Jessica Jones. She's been cast as Jessica Jones in the Netflix series, a.k.a. Jessica Jones, I think it's going to be called. And I never read the Jessica Jones comic. I heard it's really awesome and stuff, naturally, if they're turning it into a TV show. I need to pick up a trade paperback or something because I don't know a lot about her character, but I do know that her character has a relationship with Luke Cage and Iron Fist. And, it's going to be very interesting the way all this plays out, how, you know, there'll be a season of Daredevil, a season of Jessica Jones, a season of Luke Cage and Iron Fist, who I know they all are based in the Hell's Kitchen area. With Gordon Ramsay. And then there will be a Defender series with all the characters. So I'm thinking, what will it be like Daredevil next year? Jessica Jones the year after that? And it'll play out like that? Or it'll be every 6 months? Because if you start thinking about it in the next four series in 4 years, wow, this shit's going to take a long time. That's quite a commitment by the actors also. You know? So I'm curious to how they're going to do all that stuff. I don't really know, but it has me excited. I'm excited about the whole idea of Netflix. I just think is really cool. And when they started making series or picking up series that get canceled, stuff like Longmire, my wife and I watched that show together and it got canceled and it's kind of a bummer, but then you see Netflix is picking it up. It's like, cool, it lives again. That's going to be awesome. And there's something even more exciting about it. I honestly would be tempted if I ran a show like Longmire, which was on A&E, you know, cable, to be like, hey, let's work in some cursing. Maybe let's work in some nudity. Why not? You know, might as well. It's on Netflix, right? Or would you be afraid of turning off your viewers? Like, if you had every season of the show on Netflix, and then all of a sudden your fourth season has boobs and cussing, you might turn people off. So maybe that's not a good idea, but that would be awesome. I'm just saying. I wouldn't mind it. That'd be cool. So here's the thing. Okay, this is a pilot episode, and it is ETL Daily. And what you're saying, you know, daily, does that mean it's going to come out every day? I don't know. I think I'm just going to do a show when I feel like it. Right now, the frustrating thing is wanting to do a show and not being able to. The regular Entertainment Landfill show is the kind of thing where I spend a lot of time on it because I want to do the show I want to do. I want it to have clips. I want it to have drops, etc. But there's a certain amount of freedom of just hitting record and talking about things that... you're seeing every week or every day that might bother you. But I think a thing, I've never done a solo show before where it's just me. So, I mean, yes, I'm a little self-conscious of that anyone will even want to listen to this. That's okay. What I would love for you to do is tell me if this was listenable. If it wasn't and you prefer the regular show, that's fine too. Be gentle when you tell me, because it might hurt my feelings, but I really, what I think would be cool is if I had a select call list while I do these shows, and I could call you and ask you about these things. I think it's kind of funny because every day we're in the day and age of, we're in the day and age of rumors and movie rumors, casting rumors, casting news, movie announcements. It'd be cool just to pick up Skype and call you, and I will talk to you about it. Adam, both Adams out there, Rick, whatever, you're on Skype. If you guys want to be on this show on ETail Daily, this is the pilot episode. If you're interested, I'll keep doing it, especially when we can't do the regular show, because I want to keep delivering a product to you guys. And if you want me to call you on the show and talk to you about Star Wars The Force Unleashed teaser, which Bill and I did a show for yesterday, or if you want to talk about Jared Leto or Leto being the Joker, I will do that. It'll be awesome. I will call you on your phone, or I'll call you on Skype. Just email me at nimpodcast@gmail.com. Give me your Skype handle or send me your phone number. I promise to always text you first and ask you if it's okay. I won't just call you out of the blue, especially if you're at work. But I will, in fact, I will try to give you a heads up. Like, hey, tomorrow I'm doing a show. Is it cool if I call you at this time? And that way, if you're available, it's cool. Now, people that live overseas, I understand it'll be a different time. I will try to figure out a way to include you. One thing being that we could record when you are available and I could edit it into the show. This won't be a live show for now because, honestly, if like right now I'm doing the show at 1 p.m. on a Friday. Most people are at work or they're busy on a Friday at this time. Who's going to listen to me live on the internet? I'm just being, this needs to be the thing where I hit record and I just start talking. And I've listened to enough solo shows and I'm entertained by some people's solo shows. You know, I've seen Radio Dan do it for a long time. It does feel like I'm talking to myself, but I'm imagining you listening and that's what's getting me through this. Okay. So one of my ideas is to talk to people on the show and just call them randomly. One of those people is Adam Sexton. So I'm going to try to call Adam and just kind of bombard him with the news this week. You guys know Adam. He's been on the show many times via voicemail. We've even had him on the show before, which is awesome. So what I think would be cool as part of ETL Daily is to talk to people. Hello?
Hello.
Adam, hey, what's up?
Hey, man, how are you doing?
Good. How does my audio sound?
Sounds perfect to me.
All right, fantastic. Now, here's what I'm doing, just so you know. Like, what does Jason want?
What is he up
to? Yeah, what is this guy up to? I'm doing a new type of solo show, basically, of ETL. Whenever Bill and Steven aren't available and I still want to podcast because it's driving me crazy not being able to do it, I just decided to sit down and start recording and talking. And, you know, what do I talk about mostly is I just bitch about movie news that drives me crazy, right? Rumors and stuff like that. And so I was like, hey, it would be cool if I actually called people too, like get like this pool of people to call on Skype or on their phones and call them to talk to them about this stuff. So you are the test subject.
Awesome.
And okay, there's a lot of movie news right now, so I'm going to hit you with this stuff fast, okay?
Okay.
Okay, first of all, okay, we'll just get the Star Wars The Force Awakens teaser out of the way. Did you watch it? Which is a dumb question.
Oh, yeah. I was in town visiting my parents, helping them help my sister put together her house. She recently moved into a new house, and it's a bit of a fixer-upper, so I was helping with that, checking my Twitter feed, and lo and behold, there was some posts regarding the teaser, so I found the YouTube link and watched it, and it was just excited with glee. I didn't want to bother any of my parents who were just trying to fix up the house with, hey, there's a Star Wars trailer. Shut up, Adam. We're trying to fix this stuff. So, like you were talking about in your episode that you posted the other day, I mean, it brought you back to childhood. It brought you back to the feelings that original trilogy left you with. So, and I've always known we're in good hands with, you know, J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan in control of all of this. I think, you know, we're in for a treat about a year from now.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Isn't it strange, though, when you get excited about something, but you see so many other people shit on it, like, immediately?
I was just thinking about this. The last time you and Steven and Bill did a complete episode, I sent you in this long-ass voicemail, during which I talked about how frustrated I was with reactions to Interstellar or Edge of Tomorrow, and you said, and I mean, it bears repeating, other people's opinions, no matter how crazy they are, they just drive you nuts.
Yeah, and it's true, definitely. And, you know, it's funny because I know that I'm a walking contradiction, first of all, I will bitch about, say, Jared Leto or Leto. How do you pronounce his name?
I believe it's Leto.
Okay, Jared Leto is cast as the Joker. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I thought when I read that was like, oh, who cares? You know, like, because I don't really know what the Suicide Squad is going to be or anything. I just can't get excited about it right now, right?
Right.
So I'm like, every website I look at says Jared Leto is the Joker. And I'm like, I don't care. Stop telling me. But then Benedict Cumberbatch is Doctor Strange, and I'm like, dude, that's awesome. And I click on it on every website I go to. So, yes, I'm a walking contradiction, I know, but when I'm interested and when I'm not, I guess. But I guess that's just the news we have to live with, the entertainment news, where we just see the same story over and over again. But I don't know. I understand what DC's trying to do. You know, they want to be Marvel, right? But a Suicide Squad movie, I don't understand. Does not compute, you know?
That's a weird... I mean, because I'm not familiar with, you know, that comic or that series. And it would make sense for them. Right now, they're trying to push forward with a lot of these movies with the top-tier characters. Mm-hmm. And something like Suicide Squad, it just seems like a weird offshoot or something. Like, if it works, great. If it doesn't, so what? But I mean, all the names that they attach to them, to the rest of the characters, like Will Smith or Tom Hardy, I mean, great for them, but I know nothing about the story, and I'm still freaking waiting on like Dawn of Justice or the Justice League movies. I mean, all that stuff is as far as I'm concerned.
So get the Batman and the Justice League franchise going first before you make a villain movie. It's kind of like the Sinister Six movie with Marvel, Sony, I'm sorry, with the Spider-Man stuff. It's like, get a good Spider-Man movie out first before you start spinning it off, you know?
Right. I don't know if they're, I mean, because is the movie like slated to be released in like 2016 or 2017?
Suicide Squad or Sinister Six?
Suicide Squad.
I think so. It sounds like they want to get it going pretty fast.
I mean, if that's the case, so we're supposed to get Dawn of Justice in like 2016. Justice League is supposed to be around, what, 17 or 2018?
Yeah, it's like so far in the future. It's like, guys, I don't even know if I'm going to be alive.
Right. But my guess is if you're going to establish a series where it looks like the main characters are all villains, like maybe this is their way to getting them, in instead of just feeding them through like some of the bigger stuff. Like maybe we want to get like the Joker or Harley Quinn or Deadshot in this one small movie and then kick them right into the Justice League movies. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Hardly anyone knows what they're doing story-wise with these DC movies going in. We don't even know what's happening in Dawn of Justice, for crying out loud.
I know. You know, the one thing they're having success with, I don't know if you watched The Flash or Arrow, but they're getting, I mean, even Gotham, if you count that, or Constantine, which I'm not sure is doing very well in the ratings, but they could keep making these cool TV shows. I've already read that they want to do a Supergirl series on the CW. Dominate the CW and keep introducing your characters to that audience. You know, it might be successful. I mean, it's not blockbuster films, but it is an audience that wasn't there before.
Right. And they don't necessarily have to do what Marvel's doing with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where there's crossover between the show and the and the films. But maybe they're just wanting to keep that separate. It's kind of hard to tell what DC's doing at this particular point. But if something like The Flash and Arrow is doing relatively well, I mean, maybe we don't have to worry about their TV side.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I just watched they did a crossover, two-night crossover event where Arrow was on The Flash and The Flash was on Arrow, and I totally geeked out over it. I thought it was awesome.
Nice. I haven't seen it yet.
I love that kind of stuff. I love that the idea that two shows can cross over like that. They need to keep doing stuff like that. It'd be cool. It would be awesome.
Yeah, like Batman and the Green Hornet back in
exactly. One of my favorite bits is that Green Arrow is a more violent character. I mean, he shoots arrows at people.
Oh yeah,
and I love the Flash watching the Arrow shoot guys and him going, "Dude, what the hell?" You know, just like, "Dude, you've got problems. You're actually hurting these people." He's like, "Yeah, what do you want? This is how you handle criminals." And he's like, "No, that's not how I handle criminals." Because, you know, the Flash, he runs real fast and then punches you in the face and knocks you unconscious or something. He doesn't stab you in the leg. Now, okay, I'm going to hit you with some other movie news. And did you watch the Terminator Genesis trailer?
I have not, because I'm genuinely horrified by some of the reports I've heard.
Okay, I did watch it. I had to. Okay, first of all, the one kind of shocking thing I didn't know, the way the trailer starts is I was like, oh, this is a complete just remake of Terminator. That's right. The way they make it look. Then all of a sudden they trick it up where it's kind of Back to the Future 2, like where they've entered into the storyline of the original Terminator and they're altering it. And here's the craziest thing that I had no idea. I don't know if I missed this movie news, but Storm Shadow from G.I. Joe is the new T-1000.
The actor?
Yes.
Okay.
When I saw him, I was like, "Dude, what the hell? Is that an Asian T-1000? And I made the joke on Facebook. He's like, you know, "I have no problem with a black stormtrooper, but come on, an Asian T-1000? Technically, the T-1000 could be anyone he wants, though. So, no.
Right. But it does throw, I mean, weird continuity thing. I mean, was it ever established that all T-1000s looked like Arnold or...
Yeah, Robert Patrick.
Like T-180s were all, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's never really established if Robert Patrick was the, you know, the look for the T-1000, or maybe that was just...
Right. That's
no
the thing
idea,
that
because I'm not really it's not like I'm really interested in minutia like that, but have you ever heard any theories about
how
the T-180s were supposed to look that way?
Well, remember in T2 when that cop shows up and he looks at the fence and the T-1000 comes up behind him? It would have made more sense if that was Robert Patrick driving up and he's looking at the fence, and then the first person that the T-1000 encounters is him, and that's why he stays him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But remember, they show Robert Patrick naked, and he shows up and he guts him or whatever, and he changes into the officer. So it never really made sense, except for they just wanted it to be Robert Patrick, you know? And I remember Sam Winston saying that, like, one of those special effects things about T2, and he was like, "This is the T-800 model, and they all look like Arnold." And I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Basically, they were all constructed to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. You would think they would want them to all look like different people if they're an infiltration unit.
Exactly, because, I mean, you see in, like, Terminator 1 where one of them actually makes an attempt to break mm-hmm. into the Rebel, like, the Rebel compound or whatever.
Right, and he's got the glowing eyes, and, yeah, that doesn't look like Arnold, so.
Yeah, I think they go back to Arnold because that's star power for your vehicle, which is really the only reason they're keeping him on with this movie, so.
Yeah, it's obvious from Terminator 1 and Terminator 2, they retconned it where they're all Arnold, you know, because it made sense for them, you know?
Right.
But watching this trailer, you know, the Terminator, I remember first watching it at my grandma's house. The videotape was sitting there, and I was alone. I was like, Terminator. And I stick it in, and, dude, I was totally blown away from the bar scene on, you know, where Reese shoots the Terminator like 5 times with a shotgun and knocks him down, and then the whole chase ensues. Dude, I was riveted, and I rewound it, watched it again. I watched that movie so many times that I can quote it to this day. Okay,
oh,
I love the Terminator. So then when Terminator 2 came out, I remember reading that Arnold, he's the good guy. And I was like, oh, what? And I was just like worried. Even though I trusted James Cameron, I was also very nervous.
Really? I mean, because I had read that they had tried to keep that a secret, but apparently you got spoiled or somehow.
Yes. I read too many things about it. I was too excited, like Premier Magazine and Starlog and all that. But it was like, who is that other guy? Who's that cop? You know, because even when you watch T2 now, they try to set it up the same way where, like, okay, that cop guy, he's the good guy, and Arnold's back to kill John Connor. But, you know, they kind of set it up that way, but it gets spoiled in the movie trailers, you know, and stuff like that.
Right. I guess the only way that you know, you've got that famous sequence in the hallway where the T-180 is coming down one end, the T-1000 is coming down the other end. Maybe the movie, you know, the scene still works because you're sympathizing mostly with John and he's confused right in that moment. But yeah, I can remember because I still have my little T2 Ultimate Edition DVD, the one that had like that little metal
case too. Yeah.
Or whatever. And it was talked about in the supplements where Cameron said, you know, we were trying to keep that a secret so that scene would have the ultimate impact. But I guess for a lot of, you know, if they tried something like that today, it would never work.
It wouldn't work. And I don't know if I'm remembering it wrong, but I swear that I remember knowing he was the good guy. You know, when the movie started, it just got spoiled for me. I don't know if it was rumors are that Arnold is actually a good Terminator. And it's just like, what?
I really had no idea because I was too young to see it in the theaters, and you know, I watched it when it first came out in rental, but I had only seen like the first Terminator on television or whatever, so I really didn't know what to expect, but that scene played out very well. But yeah, if you had any exposure to entertainment magazines or whatever, I could see how you could be spoiled.
Well, not only that, for T2, my friend and I, we drove to Los Angeles to go to the first ever Terminator convention. And at the convention was James Cameron, Edward Furlong, Sam Winston, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then the next day, we went to see T2 at the Cinerama Dome. And then we had to drive home, which is like, you know what's funny? Think about that. We drove to California to go to that convention and then see the movie. And then the way home is like the longest drive in history because
you're worn out.
Yeah. We were like, oh, like excited. And, oh, my God. We're going to that. And then we see it. We're like, okay, that was awesome. But we got to drive home. And I remember like when we got home, like I was like, dude, I got to go home and take a nap or whatever. And like, I don't know if it was like 3 hours later, I called and go, dude, you want to go see T2? Like we went and saw it again as soon as we got home.
I'm confused. How far away were you from the your home and the convention, how long did you have to drive?
It's basically, if I remember right, it's from Fort Worth, Texas to Los Angeles. It's basically like a 2.5. It can be a 3-day drive, but I think we did it 2.5 days.
I can't even fathom that, man.
It is insane. And it takes forever to get out of Texas. You're like driving a whole day and you're like, we're still in Texas. It was insane. But we took a week off and did that. But that was pretty crazy. That will show you how much of an insane T2 guy I was. Like, I got to know everything about this. But I've changed a lot in that way where I don't like to ruin things for myself anymore. You know what I mean?
Something tells me you are not going to go to the limits for Terminator Genesis.
Absolutely not. Because that's okay. That I just established. Okay. What kind of Terminator fan I am. So when I watch that, I now know what people who were upset about Noah felt like, you know, like you're messing with Terminator, my holy Bible. Okay. No, but it's just like when you watch it, you've got to watch the trailer. It's just too hard to explain. I mean, they've got good actors in there. That guy, Jason Clarke from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. They've got Jay Courtney, who is we all remember from Spartacus, or he was John McClane's son in that horrible Die Hard movie.
He was the bad guy in Jack Reacher.
Yes,
that's where I know him.
Yeah, he was that guy, and he was also, you know, we have Storm Shadow playing the T-1000, and we have what's her face from Game of Thrones,
Emilia Clarke.
Yeah. Daenerys Targaryen. So
Daenerys, I think. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Jared Leto, I don't know. So the problem with the trailer, if you watch it, Jason Clarke's makeup is awful. He has like that John Connor scar on his face. I don't know if, you know, a lot of times I give the benefit of the doubt when I watch a trailer that, okay, the CGI is not finished or they need to work on this. His makeup looks awful. Hopefully it's just not lit well, or they're going to fix it in post. Maybe digitally fix his makeup. I don't know. But the CGI is also god-awful in certain shots. And that, I forgive it for that, because we all know that sometimes they put out trailers before the effects are done, right?
Right.
So the plot is so insane. It's like they're going back to Terminator and changing it. And part of that annoys me, you know, like the fanboy in me. And another part of me tries not to care at all. Like, oh, who cares? You know, Terminator Salvation, that came and went. Nobody remembers it. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it'll start to look better after a while and I'll go see it.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I've seen are the photos that they released. I believe it was for Entertainment Weekly, which kind of looked, you know, pretty ridiculous. And they were all holding these goofy guns and making weird poses with their war faces.
Yeah.
Or their O faces, depending on how you you interpret it. But it sounds like it seems like a reboot, much like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot, where it just doesn't seem to inspire as much confidence. Like, maybe, I don't know. I'm of the mind that the franchise should have died with T2. I felt that Cameron tied the bow on it pretty nice. I don't know. I was pretty happy with the way it ended.
And dude, Arnold is looking so old as the Terminator.
Right. I mean, we can keep the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Mm-hmm. I mean, those did just fine. But
yeah, I watched that.
Yeah, I just think they're in a way kind of beating a dead horse with this. But I'll check out the trailer and I'll see how I.
What it looks
really
like to me is
that.
The Terminator, they sent another one back, I don't know, and raised, okay, This is what it looks like to me. It's an alternate timeline. I could forgive it for this, much like, you know, say like Star Trek, where, oh, look, we're taking a time thread and we're putting it over here. So we're not changing your franchise. We're just making another timeline. And that is, they sent a reprogrammed T-800 model back when Sarah Connor was a child. And the Terminator raised her to be a badass. So, and the time comes where Reese arrives to save her, and instead she's there to save him. And also the T-800 has aged because of all that time. So it's now an old Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, of course it aged.
Yeah, because you have to have an old Arnold Schwarzenegger.
There's no reason they would, craft like some old person skin over an T-80 exoskeleton.
And what's funny also is they've copied and pasted naked Arnold from Terminator and put him in this movie. And as he's standing there, it looks so bad because it looks like they pasted him in the movie. I don't know.
This is kind of depressing me, but I'll check out the trailer.
I know. And here's the thing, like the day and age of Facebook, when I first saw it, someone goes, dude, this looks badass. And I'm like, really? And I watched it and I go, does it really look badass? I don't know about that, but I've even seen some people, you know, I don't know why people like to shit on Star Wars. They're like, if you thought the Star Wars teaser was good, check this out. I'm like, what? You're insane.
Yeah. But for some people, I think those prequels inspired such a bad taste that they feel like this is a defense mechanism. We need to be skeptical. We need to be cynical of something like this because we let our guards down once. Oh, no, three times we let our guards down.
Right.
And we quote unquote suffered the price for it. We're not going to let that happen this time. So we have to act like we are above this. It's
exactly. But I couldn't help it, dude. When I watched that trailer, like I was just like, dude, I'm there. I'm like sold. And I was giddy.
Yeah.
And I will say this much about the prequels. You know, Bill and I have trashed them enough on our show or whatever. All I know is this, I have no desire to ever watch them again. And that's not good when it comes to Star Wars. I will watch the original trilogy any day of the week. And I could watch it at any time. But I don't want to sit through the prequels again. You know?
Right.
So would you say that's a bad review on the prequels?
Well, I mean, it's what most... I mean, my feelings on the prequels are pretty much I don't know. The first two, yeah, they're all badly made, but I could almost make a case for Revenge of the Sith because at least, thematically it gets to the what George Lucas was always trying. It feels like Revenge of the Sith was just, you know, what George Lucas was trying to get to, and the previous two movies were just screwing around. Warts and all, I kind of like it, but it does have big warts with hairs coming out of them. I mean, it's not perfect,
right?
But yeah, I mean, unless I'm watching those movies with riff tracks commentaries or the commentaries that you and Bill did, I don't think I could watch them. Just the way that they are anymore.
And I will say this. I mean, I'll say I never want to watch them again. I have watched them many times. You know, I watched Attack of the Clones way too many times. And I hate watched it pretty much. You know, it was funny when I watched Attack of the Clones the first time. I was like, oh, man, it's so much better than The Phantom Menace. But I actually like Phantom Menace more than the Attack of the Clones. And I don't know why. Well, I do know why, but I won't go into that because I've talked about that before, you know.
You've covered it.
Yeah, I've covered that. So, okay. Terminator Genesis. I'll wait to see what you say about that.
Okay.
But it's the same kind of thing. Just remember, I try to keep things in perspective, like casting news and actors. Do you remember way back when Terminator Salvation was coming out? You know, like Christian Bale is going to play John Connor, for Pete's sakes. That's going to be awesome, right?
Right.
Common is going to be in Terminator Salvation. Do you remember that?
Sort of. I don't recall him from the movie. That's not the cast member I think of.
Yeah, Sam Worthington is going to be in it.
Yeah.
And just remember, you watched the movie and you were underwhelmed. I don't remember being excited about that movie, so that's a bad example.
Yeah, it's set in, you know, the post-apocalyptic version of the Earth, and it's so dreary an experience, and Christian Bale's just trying to be about as intense as he can possibly be, you know, before he can explode, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But so before he can just yell at the cinematographer.
It just felt underwhelming.
Yeah, that's the thing. Anton Yelchin, he was decent in that, but it's just kind of forgetful. Without James Cameron at the helm, it's just not that exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I still maintain that series kind of lived and died under Cameron.
Yeah, it never.
He just had a way. Certain series can do that if when their creators leave, you just don't have that particular kind of magic anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like, and it seems to be directors are one and done when they make a sequel to that, like Terminator 3 had that Jonathan Mostow. And I remember seeing that in the theater and leaving going, oh, that was kind of entertaining, and didn't think anything else of that. I wasn't like, oh, I got to own that on DVD or anything like that. And that's what I want. I want films that blow me away and I have to own them, you know, stuff like that. You know, it'd be exciting. Right. Like if you would have told me that they'll be making Terminator films, Jason, like 20 years from now, and you won't even care. And I'd be like, you're crazy. You know, but it's true. So maybe they can prove something. They could prove me wrong. I'll watch another trailer later on. But the only bad thing is that was a two minute and 30 second trailer. That was a pretty big trailer. Maybe it's finished. They're done.
Maybe they're pretty confident in its current state. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam, thank you so much for being on the first. Basically, you're on the pilot episode of ETL Daily. And I just hope people want to listen to it because I've never done a solo show before, but right now I'm talking to you, so it's not solo, but.
Well, don't feel bad because I'm still trying to attempt my solo show and I'm still working on it. But I mean, I've had a good time talking about these things. So, just, you know, keep at it. And you've got your audience and they'll be looking forward to content. And we understand that there are times where, you know, the three of you can't get together. So, just keep it up, and I've got to remind myself to do the same thing with my own podcast.
Yeah, and would it be cool if you're on my call list, like next time I do a show, if there's some other wacky news out, like that? Like whoever's going to play King Tut in the next Batman movie, or Egghead, or something like that?
Right.
Why don't they bring those villains back?
Maybe let's get some of the more well-known characters and then we can just go crazy.
Oh yeah. It's going to be awesome. Well, Adam, thank you very much for being on the show and I can't wait to get the show out and see what people think.
All right, man. Well, thank you for having me for this.
No problem. It was awesome. And are you still watching Chuck, by the way?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through season 3 right now. I kind of stalled because of Thanksgiving weekend, and I watched other things. But season 3 is pretty good so far. Just recently, you know, caught up with what's her face from Smallville, Christian.
Christian
Pruitt, I believe.
Uh huh.
And the Brandon Routh character is pretty interesting, although I'm not buying that. You know, it's like they're trying to set up relationships for both Chuck and Hannah.
Right.
And what's his name, Shaw and Sarah. The Shaw and Sarah, it's not clicking with me.
Right. You know what's funny?
Chuck and Hannah's working. I'm a little scared about that.
Yeah. And you know what's funny about when that happened, that episode? I guess it was Chuck versus the Mask. Have you watched that one where...
I don't remember their episode names.
Where they're working at a museum security and they have to get this mask out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that episode where it looks like they're putting Sarah with Shaw and Chuck with Hannah, there was like a 3-week break. Like the show, when this first aired, that episode, and I remember people were pissed. They're like, what are you doing? You're ruining the show. Chuck belongs with Sarah. I don't like this girl from Smallville. What is she even doing here? I hate Brandon. People are like getting so mad. They're like, I'm not watching the show anymore. And I was like, oh my God, you know, because if you just like read Twitter or whatever, people were so angry. And I was like, what is wrong with these people? It's just like one episode, you know? And it's just funny, like, on Netflix, you can just keep going. You don't have to wait weeks between episodes, like, originally. And I just remember that episode making so many people mad. It didn't upset me because, you know, I'm waiting for the story to play out. You know, they're, of course, you know, they got to put obstacles in Chuck and Sarah's way. But I guess some people are really impatient about it, you know.
Yeah, you're just thinking, you know, at the end of the last two scenes, it seems like, yes, they can make this work, and no, they get pulled away.
Yeah,
I was so surprised at the beginning of the third season where Sarah just hates Chuck, hates him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's based on, you can understand, but it's based on a kind of unreasonable reasonable misunderstanding.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, man, he's just getting kicked in the junk over and over again, and what's his name, Emmett's even grinding into his bones. So
yeah, that's what I love, that first episode, the very first episode where Chuck shows up to get cheese balls and he looks horrible and he's like, wow, look who's here.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. And what about when Emmett gets killed? Did that shock you?
It was kind of ballsy. I thought like, you know, that guy was going to like knock him out, but he just straight up executes him. And
yeah.
And that music, that song starts playing, and it was just like, wow.
Wilson Phillips.
Yeah. I mean, and I like, I think what's the actor, Tony Hale is the one who played, Emmett.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a sleazeball, but I mean, he's very funny, and I figured they would have found another way, but it's that show does not have at this particular point, like, it's not developed like this characteristic for being what's the word, cavalier with human life or anything.
Right.
I mean, they haven't killed off a whole lot of supporting characters.
Right,
so
right.
Far.
So when there's a death, it's just like, holy shit, you know, kind of the thing.
Yeah.
That was like shocking. Even when I rewatch it and it gets to that point, it's almost like I'm reminded, like, oh yeah, he dies here. Like, holy crap. And that's what I love about the show, how it has this sense of danger and comedy, and it's playing with so many things at the same time. There's never, not any shows like that. You know, and that's what I loved about it. It has references to childhood things, you know, or, you know, they reference Star Wars, Tron, video games or whatever, but also James Bond movies and stuff. It's really cool how it's just got all these things that I love in it. And I think that's why I love it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually had the idea. I want to do a Chuck podcast covering, honestly, it would be for my love of it. I don't know if anybody who listens to the show would really care about it. Maybe people who like Chuck would, but I would talk about the music that's in each episode and the references and stuff like that. It would just be kind of fun to take it apart. Not in like a, like, nerdy way, not in a way that's like I'm analyzing it psychologically, just what I love about the show, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You mentioned in your blog about how you kind of suppressed the fact that you were watching Chuck because you wanted to keep it this sacred thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a part of you now that kind of wishes that you know, you had checked up on it regularly. Like maybe you thought there was a way that, you know, you could have gotten Bill or Steven into the show and you could have talked about it then. I mean, do you feel that way or do you?
There was a time in season one where I would try to talk to Bill about it. And he was really flippant about how the show just seemed really stupid to him. And I was like, okay, well, I'm never talking about the show with him again. Because I was just like, okay, I can't talk. Obviously, I love the show. I mean, as much as I did in season one, season two is where I definitely knew that I love the show. I think it was the Chuck versus Tom Sawyer episode with Missile Command where I was like, okay, I love this show. And I remember saying something to Bill about, hey, have you been watching Chuck lately? And he said something about the fight choreography sucked or something. And I was like, I'm never bringing this show up to him again because I want to pummel him. just there's some things you just can't share with people, you know? I have to protect what I love, and I'm not going to let somebody, you know, destroy it. And so right. I couldn't bring up Chuck every week on the show like Smallville and have Bill dissect it. It would kill me to, you know, because when I love something that much, I'm not overly critical. I just love the show. So I couldn't bear to have him tearing things apart and telling me the green screen here sucked or some shit like that. That just doesn't matter to me, you know?
Right. No, that's perfectly understandable. At least you made an attempt, but it would have made for a miserable experience.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad you're watching, Chuck. I hope you like it as it goes on.
I think I will because it hasn't screwed up, you know, yet. And you know, the fight choreography, I mean, it doesn't have to be like, you know, the most amazing thing. It's just something they can get through with it. And just get past it and just get to the real meat of it. I mean, but, you know, most of the action scenes are actually pretty well done.
And Yvonne Strahovski is awesome as Sarah. And she's just so physically, like, awesome in her fighting and stuff. She's so good in that role. And what's interesting about season three also, season three is the season I was like, oh, my God, it's going to get canceled because the ratings were awful. And I think that's a 19-episode season. At one point, it was 13 episodes only. And okay. I thought it was going to be gone forever. If you watch it now, and as it gets up to episode 13, it feels like they're wrapping the show up. And that episode 13 is awesome because it feels like it's the final episode of the series. But then they got a back order of to 19 episodes. So they kept going. And it's really cool. If you like watching that 13th episode where it feels like, oh my God, the series is ending. And then that following episode, it's like they got a reprieve from death row and the show becomes so much even more fun. You know, it's pretty awesome. It's like, oh guys, we still have jobs, you know?
I have heard, I don't know. Have you ever listened to a podcast called The Movie Crypt?
No.
I recently came into it because Drew McWeeny was on an episode of it, and usually if McWeeny's on a podcast episode that I've never heard of, I'll check the podcast out.
Oh, cool.
It's these two filmmakers, I think it's like Adam Green and Joe Lynch, and they're both independent, mostly horror, but they've also dabbled in other stuff where they usually interview other filmmakers or people they've collaborated with. And at one point, they interviewed Zachary Levi, and it was a pretty decent episode explaining how he got into show business, the gigs that he got. You know, it talked about Chuck. I had to skip through a part of it because he brought up the series finale and how fans reacted to it and what he had to say. I didn't want to know, so I skipped past that because he talks about. He talks about gaming, like multiplayer gaming in particular, and about how his philosophy on life, and he's got like this charity foundation. I forgot what it was called.
Yeah, Operation Smile.
Yeah, and you know the the process of doing that. But I think you should check it out. One of the things that he talked about before he got into spoiler territory with that series finale is that there was some criticism of season four where there was a drip toward the more dramatic or the more serious. I mean, without spoiling anything, do you feel that way about season four, or was it pretty consistent pretty much to the end?
It's really hard for me to be critical of the show, honestly, right. Because
if it goes into more dramatic territory, like if the stakes get higher, I don't see that as a bad thing.
No,
I'm
the
just
stakes,
saying,
the
tonally,
stakes,
does it change that dramatically, or, I mean, was this just some people's opinions?
If anything, I think it gets better. And when the stakes are high, I think it's better. And I really think season four is a very strong season because NBC gave it a 24 episode order. Okay, Chuck fans, you guys want a season? We're giving them, boom, 24 episodes. And they had a whole story arc laid out before, you know, they would be like, I don't know if we're going to be around to do this whole story arc, but they could plan this 24 episode kind of story arc thing. And it's really cool. Season four is very unique where it's like they had the confidence. They knew they were going to be around, basically, where in season three they didn't. And it's a really strong season. They've got a great villain, too.
So, yeah, I've heard like, you know, Timothy Dalton shows up at one particular point. I don't know if that's the season that happens in.
Yes, it is.
But I was just thrilled to see that they've got some of the people. I never thought I would see Chevy Chase as a villain.
Yeah, wasn't he great?
Made him into an awesome villain. He's funny, but he's such a prick.
You know what? Right after that, he went on Community. It's almost like Chuck brought him out of retirement or something, and all of a sudden he got a job on a sitcom. I really think it was Chuck that got him Community. They must have seen him or something. Because he was great as a villain. That season two is probably between season two and four. It's really shaky because I love season two so much.
Yeah, and Michael Rooker showing up in the Santa Claus episode.
Yes. That was, you know, one thing that's funny is when I start the season over, I have to remember, like, oh, Chuck doesn't have his powers yet. Like, he doesn't have kung fu yet, you know? And you have to kind of, like, get used to that. Because it's really cool. In season three, they essentially give him superpowers. It's really cool how they do that.
Oh, yeah.
They have a way of rebooting each season that's cool.
Of kind of setting things back to square one, or at least, you know, before he gets too ahead of himself. I don't know. I really, you know, dig the show. I think it's got, you know, a nice consistent, you know, tone to it. And it even works with you when you got like a mission per episode, or maybe you've got like maybe one or two that have like an arc or whatever. But I mean, it's pretty remarkable how they've kept, you know, a great little tone, you know, throughout.
And you dig like Jeff and Lester and Morgan.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be there. Morgan creaked me out right off the bat. I mean, you know, he's loyal, but man, he just never goes away.
Yeah.
But later on in the season, I actually preferred him to be around. It's Jeff and Lester, mostly Lester, who just really creeps me out.
Yes. You know what's funny? I'll send you this long interview with Chris Fedak and Josh Schwartz after you finish the whole series. It's this interview where they go through each season and what they went through and what they tackled and stuff. But with season one, season two, in the off season between season one and two, they wanted to fix Morgan. They thought that they made him too unlikable in season one, and they wanted to make him, they wanted to win the audience back over in season two. And
I came around to Morgan, you know, maybe it took like maybe four or five episodes in before I started to warm over to Morgan, because you start to see the value he is through, how Chuck sees him. You know, he's not just this. He's not this Freddy freeloader type of person.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like if Chuck sees some value in him, I know he's a good guy. You know, that's the way I would look at it. Because Chuck is kind of the barometer on a good person. That's what I think is interesting about season three. And Sarah doesn't like seeing what he's becoming. And I think that's what bothers her the most, because he's such a pure person to her. To see him being able to learn how to lie. Like, he's gotten really good at lying to his sister, and it's kind of disturbing when you think about it. Like, you don't want to become good at lying, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really cool show. I've never really talked about it a lot with people, so it's cool to talk to you about that. I'm excited that you're watching it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad I am, as well. And I was just thankful, you know, you had that blog post. I was like, I didn't know he had a blog, and weird.
Yeah,
so
it was the kind of thing where I started a blog and never wrote anything else about it.
Right. But I mean, no, the blog post was enthusiastic enough to make me at least, you know, take a chance on it. So
it's different telling somebody like, hey, go buy these Blu-rays, but instead, like, Netflix, it's all there, just start watching it, you know.
Right. We're into the TV, we're into the fall season. There's not a whole lot of stuff for me to, it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of stuff for me to watch. The only new show I'm really keeping up with right now is the final season of The Newsroom on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some downtime. I mean, you know, January when Justified and Archer and Game of Thrones comes back later in the spring, I mean, there will be nowhere for me to turn. I mean, I'll be devoted to those. But if I can, you know, finish this series off, maybe at least before the month is over, I think I will have accomplished a big task there. So I just need to stay the course.
Yeah, it's really cool. I start to get, even though I've done a full series rewatch multiple times, when I start getting midway through season four, I start getting sad, like, oh, it's almost over. Because season five is only 13 episodes.
Yeah.
And so I start to get bummed out. Like, oh no, I'm running out. But it's a kind of thing where it's interesting because, you know, I love Lost or Battlestar Galactica. When those shows ended, I was bummed out, but it was time for them to end.
Yeah.
Something about Chuck, it feels like a friend of mine died and I'm not over it yet, because I am like, why isn't this show still around? Like, when I see something like NCIS is on for 7 years or Bones is on for 20 years, I'm like, yeah, Chuck should still be on the air right now. Damn it. And I even like told Heather, because my wife loves Burn Notice, and she'll buy like these paperbacks of Burn Notice. They put out these novels. And I'm like, dude, why don't they have Chuck novels? I would totally read those.
Weird. Yeah, they'll have novels for Castle, and they'll have NCIS or CSI stuff.
Yeah.
But
like, why can't we have Chuck books, you know?
Yeah, you could have an expanded universe for Chuck.
Yeah, you know what's weird is also I saw, like, I check out a couple of Chuck blogs, but it's even funny, even those, when they're critical of episodes, there's this one website called Chuck This, where they rank the episodes, and it drives me nuts because I don't rank the episodes. I love all of them. So when they start to get critical, it starts to annoy me. But they talked about this college professor, watched the series with his son on Netflix, and he started analyzing it, because that's what he does. He analyzes literature. He started analyzing Chuck, and he wrote a book called Unpacking Chuck, and it's all about his analysis of the entire series. And it's on sale on Amazon. And I was like, oh, that's cool, I should pick that up. But then I started thinking about it. It might annoy me because I hate, like, film as art discussions where, you know, John Connor is Jesus Christ in Terminator, you know, that kind of thing. Right. And I don't know if I want to read it, honestly. But I think it's cool he wrote a Chuck book, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's perfectly understandable. But you don't want someone's you know, radically wild opinion, clouding your own.
The funniest thing about that show, as many times as I've watched it, right now I actually am doing a series rewatch again. I'm up to season 4, like episode 3. And, you know, last week I was sick and I was like, I'm going to put Chuck on it. And I just sit there vegging out, feeling like crap. But I'm watching Chuck and I'm like laughing at things because the show makes me feel better. And I was going to ask you on the season finale of season 2, you know, which was awesome, by the way. Chevy Chase. There's that part where Jeffster is playing at the wedding and they're playing what are they playing? Oh, they're playing Mr. Roboto.
Yes.
And Awesome's dad comes over, who's played by Bruce Boxleitner, and he goes, why is Sam Kinison and that Indian lesbian ruining your wedding? And I don't care how many times I see it, that always cracks me up when he says that.
Yes. Oh, God. That was good. That was
Sam
a good
Kinison
line.
Sam Kinison and that Indian lesbian. God, it's so funny. I love Jeffster so much. It's so funny.
I talked about this in like a Facebook message, but that there's that one moment in the first season where Ellie and Morgan is having a heart to heart, and he says, "You know, you're always like a sister to me." And they hug, and he says, "Sister, I always wanted to have sex with." And she's like,
"Yes."
I laughed my ass. I had to pause it because I was laughing so hard.
Oh, I love it. But the show is so funny.
It is, man.
Such a great show. But it's so funny when I'm sure, like, you have things that you hold dear when you hear other people talk about it. It's just like, oh, God, just shut up. You don't get it. Bill and I, before we even started a podcast, we used to argue about The Matrix because I've always, you know, I love The Matrix, the first film, but I think the other two suck. I just think they suck. And Bill would argue that, no, there's a lot of merit there because of all the cool, like, spiritual things in there. And I'm like, that's just a bunch of mumbo jumbo horse shit. You know, what am I going to do? Burst his bubble? You know, like, just keep telling him it sucks when he loves it. I'm just going to let him love it. Right.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if I would have been able to control myself if we were talking about the Matrix sequels, because I'm of the camp that I love them. I'm not the philosophical stuff is there, but I think those movies are strong in a lot of ways, although they do have their moments of self-indulgence. I mean, I like Reloaded, but it has at least two sequences where I just think, guys, you really should have cut this stuff out. You didn't need this.
Back then when the films had first come out, I was very passionate about my dislike. Since then, I've mellowed quite a bit because, you know, you tend to watch them when they're on HBO or whatever. And I think my main problem with it is missed opportunities in the storytelling where, it could have been. It's almost like when you watch the prequels, it could have been so much better if they'd done this. And that's what I experience when I'm watching those sequels where I think the original Matrix is a perfect film and I love it. And when I watch the sequels, I mean, especially the second one, Reloaded.
Right.
I remember being especially just annoyed at Reloaded because, you know, first of all, it ends with a to be continued. But, I didn't think the story was as good as in the first film, you know?
Well, one of the things that benefited me that really, you know, affected how I view those films was I think two things, you know, really change how you feel about either one of those movies, which is they're packed with so much information, either expository or visual or whatever, that you need to see them multiple times. But also it would have helped if you were able to get into internet discussion groups with people. There was an website, it's gone now, called thematrixcommunity.org, and I don't know how I got onto that. I mean, maybe I was found it through another message board or so, but there were there were discussions and there were members who would have in-depth conversations about, you know, those sequels. And you had people who love them and people who hate them. But you had this juxtaposition of arguments and debates that I think helped shape how I felt about those movies. And even if I don't understand all the philosophical stuff, where they took that story to me is more appealing because of, you know, the conversations I had on it. I like the first film very much, but I'm kind of in the camp with like Roger Ebert that I felt like it was missing kind of like a third act. It just seemed to end abruptly. And where they took it in those second and third films just felt like, well, that's, to me, that's the third act that they needed. They didn't need to do the first movie over again. They expanded mm-hmm. it in a weird way. And I initially wrote Revolutions off. I just thought it turned into another, it's man versus machines. We've got Terminator all over again.
Mm-hmm.
But I went back and emotionally, I went back, the expectations I had on that first view was gone, and emotionally the movie worked better for me. I don't know how that is, but I think just some movies don't give away all their secrets or all their meanings on the first viewing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it also, and I'm not, you know, expectations were very high for because, as I said, I freaking love the first movie so much. When that second one came out, dude, I was through the roof excited. Like, I could barely sit still. And so as it's going on, I started getting like this unsettling feeling, you know, like, well, the story's not really kicking into gear, really. It's just, I remember just when it ended with that to be continued, and I was walking out, you know, I was with my brother-in-law, and I was just kind of like, I'm not sure if I like this or not. It's kind of weird. Like, I expected to be running out of theater like, dude, that was awesome. And instead, I was just ambivalent, and I wasn't expecting that at all. And I wasn't sure how to handle it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Wachowski brothers got a sweet deal after they made that first movie. Warner Brothers gave them this huge $30 million plus budget. They said, just make two films and go nuts. And they went nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where that first film is structured in such a way where I think the film doesn't really start. I think the 45-minute mark where Neo and his crew have to go back into the Matrix and meet with the Oracle again, from that point until the end of the movie really takes off. And to me, it has, you know, some of the best stuff in the entire trilogy or whatever.
I still love the Burly Brawl. I do enjoy that sequence.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, what was the name of the guy who did the soundtracks to those movies? Has he ever done anything else?
I think it was Don Davis did the score.
The Matrix scores are awesome. And yeah. I don't know if he's ever worked again, but that's one thing that what's kind of funny is that while watching Chuck is heavily influenced by the Matrix, believe it or not.
No, I can definitely see that. Like,
he is
every
the Matrix.
When he flashes and he gets the kung fu flashes.
Yeah.
You can start to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know if you've heard me complain about my dad. Whenever I explain to him a movie, he goes, sounds like the Matrix. It's like he says it about everything. And that was like one of them. Like, oh, I love the show Chuck, where he has a computer in his brain and he can download things and stuff. It's like, sounds like the Matrix. I'm just like, no. It's true, though. Everything's the Matrix. But Chuck, even the music in it reminds me of the Matrix a lot of times. But that's cool, though. There's nothing wrong with loving something a lot like that, you know?
Right. I'm pretty sure that Don Davis at least did I think he did like the score for maybe Speed Racer, I want to say. I could be.
Oh, yeah, that was Giacchino, I think.
Okay, yeah, okay, I was wrong about that. Let's see, he did Bound, and he's done some really crappy movies. He's did Behind Enemy Lines, House on Haunted Hill. So, no, wow. He's doing an opera, apparently. Weird.
Weird. Oh, well, that podcast you're talking about, was it called The Movie Crypt?
Yeah, The Movie Crypt podcast.
Okay.
With,
I brought up the
Joe
website.
Lynch and Adam Green.
Cool. I brought up the website to check it out. You know what's funny is I love listening to podcasts, and I listened to one yesterday. I was talking to this guy. He does a website called Branded in the 80s. It's an 80s-centric type of website. Very geeky. And I said, hey, have you read Ready Player One? You'd probably really like that because you love this 80s stuff. And he goes, actually, I did a podcast with my friends talking about it if you want to check it out. And he sent me the link. And I was like, oh, cool. And I downloaded it, and I went to the store. I was doing a lot of shopping. And they were making me so mad. They were being so critical of it and analyzing it and, you know, like telling me, they were saying how it's not believable how, you know, in this future, the poverty would be at this level where you wouldn't want to live in reality. You'd want to live in virtual reality. It was making me so mad just hearing them talk about it. And I didn't have the heart to say, yeah, listen to your podcast. I hated it. But it made me so mad. It's so funny how, like, it's just, I don't know if it's the way I am or the way everybody is. When you really like something like Ready Player One or Chuck, having somebody take something apart is not enjoyable.
Oh, it isn't.
It may be for them.
Even if you think that their criticisms have validity, you just kind of wish, why can't we see eye to eye on this one thing?
Yeah, I kept thinking, well, you know how I'm working on a book now? I'm writing a book. If they talked about something I'd written the same way, it would devastate me. You know, I would be like, I'm never writing again. So how do people deal with criticism? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I remember like last year, Man of Steel came out. I had 5 or 6 conversations with people debating how that movie was. And it's like the criticism I heard most was, it's not the Superman that I know or the Superman that I prefer. And no one was seeming to, if you were willing to criticize it, you weren't willing to look at it from like a script level or like a performance level, whatever. It was just, the movie isn't the movie you want it to be, and you weren't judging it for what it was trying to do. And it drove me nuts. I think I spent more time defending or debating that film than expressing how much I loved it. And so, yeah, I know exactly what that feels like.
Yeah, and it could drive you crazy, you know?
Yeah, very crazy.
Even, you know, with the Star Wars stuff, seeing where people go when after they watch it, it's like, this is what enters your mind right after you watch this. Mine was just elation and being super happy and excited that there's a new Star Wars. But it's so strange how people go to the negative so fast. So quickly.
Oh yeah. And they went for the jokes. They went for the really crass stuff. I saw one image where one guy photoshopped when John Boyega appears in that first shot and he turns around, some asshole put like a KFC in the distance. Oh, really?
I saw where somebody wrote, what is this, 12 years a parsec? And I was like, that's what? What? How long did it take them to come up with that and quickly write it on Twitter or whatever?
Well, yeah, welcome to the age of the internet where, look at me, I'm doing something crazy. YOLO and give me some retweets or some hits.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, of course, you know, I thought that lightsaber was badass when I saw it, but then I read somebody else tell me, no, it's not badass, it's stupid. And I'm like, oh, okay, sorry, I thought it was cool.
Fanboys are their own worst enemy. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. Just like,
oh, God.
And it's so funny. I can't help it. You know, Bill always says, don't look at the comments, just ignore it. It's like, I can't help it. And I've even done this experiment with Heather where she can watch any movie, like on HBO. I said, like, if you ever go to IMDb, look at the message board. They ask the stupidest questions. It's so entertaining. And she goes, I'm not going to go on IMDb and look at this. And she was watching Must Love Dogs with Diane Lane and John Cusack. And I was sitting there at the computer and I was watching her watch it. And I was like, huh. And I go to IMDb, Must Love Dogs, and I'm reading the comments. And I go, hey, can you pause it for a second? And she's like, sure. And I go, this person asked this question about the movie. And there's a scene where Diane Lane She runs like a daycare or a kindergarten or something. And she has a gay best friend, which of course they do in those movies, right?
Yes.
She's sitting on the floor playing with the kids while the gay guy is sitting on a chair in the background. And someone wrote, oh, I was watching this movie. How come the gay guy can't sit on the floor with the kids? Is there something wrong? Like he will turn the kids gay? What is this movie trying to say? And I stopped Heather and I go, hey, what is this movie trying to say? That gay guy can't sit on the floor with But any movie you watch, if you go to IMDb, they have the dumbest questions. It's so funny.
They really do.
It just shows you how stupid, like, everything is. Everyone is so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. It entertains me, though. The stupidity entertains me.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for talking to me, man. This has been fun.
Oh man, no problem. You ever want to do it again, that's fine. Especially on the weekends. I usually work nights, but you know, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, I think I'm a lot more available, especially since football season is wrapped up at the school where I work at. So maybe there'll be some free nights, but we'll see. But yeah,
cool.
Man, anytime you want to do this, fine. And if you want to do it with someone else, I'll definitely want to listen to it. So you know, keep at it, man.
Thanks, man. I think it'd be cool just to call people if anybody wants to talk about it.
This has been a very worthwhile conversation. I was kind of bummed initially when you put up that post, and I was thinking, well, this means they're not going to have a Friday episode, apparently. And I was like, oh, but no, being able to do this makes up for it, man. So no, don't worry about it. Y'all record an episode when you can and do this whenever you can. I think this can work out, and you know, keep on at it, man.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
You do the same.
Well, that was cool of Adam to be on the show, and we had a nice conversation there. It would be cool to see who else we could have on the show in the future. I'll definitely keep Adam on the speed dial and call him later. And we also have another Adam to call too, Adam from the Bay Area. It'd be cool to talk to him from time to time. And these conversations don't have to be long either. If you only have 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I can just talk to you, check in with you. Any listeners to the show who want to be involved, just remember nimpodcast@gmail.com and tell me about your interest in that. And we can talk about anything. If you want to debate to me that it's actually Jared Leto and not Leto, hey, we can do that if you want to do that. It'll be fun. So that's our first show, first edition of ETL Daily. I hope you guys dug it, and it'd be cool. I'm going to encourage Bill and Steven, like, if they feel like bitching about something that's bothering them, they should record. So the reason I podcast in the first place is I need somebody to talk to. I need things to say and to bitch about things and just talk about things I love. So if you guys will let me hop on the mic and just start talking, and if you're interested enough to listen to it, then I'll love it. I'll keep doing the show, and I'll crank these out. I mean, we'll still always have regular Entertainment Landfill for you guys to listen to, because I love doing that show. But from time to time, ETL Dailies will come out, and I'll just talk about things that are on my mind or shows I've just watched. I can't wait to talk about the latest season of The Walking Dead. They just had the fall finale. Dude, what the hell is going on in that show? I don't know. It just kind of fizzled out for me. I'm not overly critical of shows, but what the hell was that hospital storyline? It wasn't that interesting, was it? I was just kind of bored, but I love television. I love movies, and I want to talk about it with you guys, and I want to talk about it on a daily, weekly basis or whatever. So who else will be cast in the next new film, the next new comic book movie or Star Wars movie, etc.? We got to talk about this stuff. It's in the news. Might as well talk about it, right? It drives me nuts. So I will continue to annoy myself by doing this show. And I hope you guys dig it. ETL Daily. Tell me what you think of this pilot episode. It'll be fun to have guests and just do whatever and just have fun talking about things. So, guys, thank you so much for your support and listening to the show. If you're a patron, thank you so much for being a patron. Thank you for being patient with us. I want to get back to cranking out material. I would love to do ETL dailies, love to do regular Entertainment Landfill episodes, and I'd love to do some more NIMH movie minis. I just want to get back in production and, you know, get back to what we love doing. So thank you guys so much for listening to the show. Thank you again to Adam Sexton for calling into the show. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. So see you next time.
Why are you letting Sam Kinison and an Indian lesbian wreck your wedding?
Now this is podcasting.